Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com. /awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hey guys, welcome back to We Met at Acme. I'm so excited to have my friend Brianna with us for our solo portion of the episode today. Hey Brianna.
Hi Lynn.
So if you live under a rock for some reason and you don't know that there are protests all over the world right now that stemmed from, you know, police brutality taking the life of George Floyd and, you know, just Black injustice around America. And I really wanted to address this to you because I have strong feelings, but as someone with white privilege who, you know, doesn't really know the what it's really like to feel like oppressed and to feel just the way that so many Black people around America are feeling right now, I wanted to bring Brianna on because she educates me and hopefully can educate all of you. So Brianna, how are you feeling today?
You know, hi Lindsay, thank you so much for using this platform and giving me a voice right now. But you know, today I feel okay. I slept well, but I wake up and there's just still so much anger because what's happening, it's terrifying. It's terrifying. It is needed, but it's really scary. And I think of my friends all throughout the world right now, and I pray for their safety. I love that they're getting involved. They're asking questions. They're actually doing real work and reading and donating and talking to their other white friends. But it's still very scary. And I wake up every morning like it's a dream. And then the reality sets in, like it always does, of me being a Black American. You know, this is not a dream and this is happening and time's up. The time's up and change is now. You know, I woke up this morning and every morning it's kind of like I wake up heavy. I wake up so heavy for my community, the Black community especially. But I'm also like heavy-hearted with a lot of my white friends who just, they feel sick. They're confused and their silence is still, it hurts, but there's just, you know, not a lot of words for that. My concern in my heart is with the Black community right now.
Yeah. And just for background, for everyone who doesn't know you as well as I do, how old are you, Bree, and where are you from?
Yeah, I'm 25 years old and I grew up in Arizona, Scottsdale, Arizona.
And you're living now
in New York City. Yeah. When I was 19, I moved out to New York and my life has changed. It changed for the better. Amazing things. I got a lot more Black friends and LGBTQ friends. And since leaving Arizona, it's changed completely.
Did you experience racism in Arizona? I mean, I don't know what it was like specifically where you grew up there.
Yes. I grew up in a very affluent neighborhood. Was only the Black person in class and in, you know, the soccer camp, at the church camp. I was the only Black one for probably till like 2004 when more people came into the community and, you know, more ethnicity. But I've experienced racism my whole life. And there's microaggressions to that racism, and then there's like some on a big scale. But every time I've experienced racism, Lindsay, I've never forgotten it. And that could be as subtle as being at my friend's and, you know, the uncle says an off-color joke, or being in a car with all my girlfriends and they're singing a rap song and just carelessly throwing out the N-word without. And so it's so hard for me because in those spaces, I was the only Black one for 20 years until I left Arizona.
Right.
And that definitely played a toll on my psyche, because those friends who I love, they're not racist. They're not bad people, but they have no understanding. And how could they? You know, they're privileged. They don't understand how I felt or what I go through or hearing those words. I don't blame them, but they don't understand and they don't see it. And that's something that I've been okay with, because I'm in these spaces. I am the only Black face, and these are my friends who I love.
Is it privilege more so, or is it like ignorance that they are so sheltered that they don't have, like, because part of me, you know, I graduated and I went to work for a predominantly Black company called Mass Appeal. It's like, you know, it's an urban magazine.
Exactly.
And I was like pretty much the only white person there. And I am so grateful for that experience, because
that time
I never understood so many things. I remember we went for like, you know, a lunch break one time, and we were pretty far from the office, and my friend Bill went to go like get us a cab to go back, and the cabs weren't stopping. The cabs didn't stop for us. And I was like, what's going on? And he was like, do you mind putting your hand up? And I was like, why? And he was like, cause the cab's not stopping for me. I was like, no, that's impossible.
Right.
And so I put my hand up, and immediately I got a cab. It was the most surreal experience. Like I wouldn't have otherwise experienced.
Yeah. And I think that, see, people aren't faced. What a great position you had to like go work for that company. And it opened your eyes. And a lot of my friends, I don't know, I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt too much. It is ignorance now, because it's 2020. And the fact that people are still silent, some influencers are still silent, that is ignorance. That is ignorance. But I don't really fault. Again, you had that experience. Some of my friends still in Arizona, still in Scottsdale, they'll never have that experience. Mm-hmm. It's like a double-edged sword. I can't blame them, but then also you need to go educate yourself and get yourself in those experiences. Just, you know, it's not enough to have that one Black friend and to think it's okay. Like, but I get it. You don't get it. And that's still so hurtful now, because I have friends who I've loved and I've known since I was 5, since I was 6, and they're still confused about it. And I think that is ignorant. That's ignorance, because you just don't understand. And also it's like, you don't want to understand. You don't want to look at my pain. You love me and you love my family so much that could have been my mother on the ground. And there's still being a disconnect. That's upsetting. And that is ignorance.
Yeah, I agree. So today is Wednesday, June 3rd. But yesterday was Tuesday, which, you know, a lot of people were calling Blackout Tuesday, where a lot of people, on my feed, and I'm sure on your feed, were posting black squares, which they believe to be in solidarity with their Black community. There's so much controversy around that. And I'm sure by the time this episode comes out on Sunday, there's going to be, you know, no controversy and everyone's going to understand, you know, one way or another. But since it's Wednesday now, what are your thoughts the day after of seeing those on Instagram?
Yesterday morning when I woke up, I was up fairly early, and going through my Instagram, I felt good. It felt good in my heart just to see all my friends and all people I follow just in one. And then as I did my research, as I listened to, you know, the Black community, to Black journalists and to Twitter, you know, there was a mismark. The black squares, and especially for right now, what's happening, it was like muted. This is not the time for us to go silent. You know, this is now when I need to see, you know, my girlfriends and my school, like I need to see everyone amplifying black voices. And so I think constructively, it was a smart idea, Blackout Tuesday, da 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 da. But ultimately, you don't want to see we're still going through a pandemic. We are all quarantined. We're all on our phones. What justice or what education is it going to do with a bunch of black square boxes for 24 hours? That's a news cycle. There's so much. We know this is a critical time and everything that's happening. This is not the time to go silent or to go ghost. It's not. And I'm sure, yeah, it's only Wednesday. We're going to get so much more information as I'm still learning it too, as a Black American, but ultimately it was counterproductive. There was a mismatch of people doing hashtag Black Lives Matter. And again, that was early corrected. Everyone's like hashtag Blackout Tuesday, mm-hmm. because if you hashtag the Black Lives Matter, it's going to get flooded. And I just think it was kind of an inappropriate time. It was not the time for this performative movement on Instagram.
If you were someone that did that and now you're hearing this and reflecting, do you think that you should delete it or you should just say, you know what, I did it. I thought it was the right thing to do and I'm moving on.
I think they should leave it up. Leave it up. It still is showing that your insult solidarity. It's going to be on your feed. When I go to look at your, it's going to be there. Leave it up. It still is a thing of unity as long as the hashtag is Blackout Tuesday. And I just think, see, it's like, we're all learning. We are all still going to learn. There's still hard conversations that are going to be had, and just, you know, leave it up, feel proud. And if someone corrects you, just explain your reasoning and how you're still bringing awareness. Oh, and you know, keep your Instagram still flooded with amplified Black voices and, you know, leave it up.
Yeah.
Leave it up. Don't, you know, don't take it down.
I have two more questions for you and then I'm going to let you go. So what is your current relationship status right now?
Yeah. So right now I've been in a relationship for a year and a month. And since the pandemic lockdown, I live in Brooklyn and I've just been at my boyfriend's in Astoria, Queens. And that has just, you know, having him as comfort, as release has just been so, it's been needed for my soul. It's been beautiful. Our relationship has strengthened, but also, you know, my boyfriend is white and we've had tough conversations these last three nights and he's had to talk to his family members who are, you know, our love has strengthened, but it's also, you know, well, what is my future going to look like if we want a child? And, you know, that lots of tough conversations, but ultimately, he's been an ally and he's been supportive and we're opening the conversation to our families because that's what we have to do moving forward. It's not going to just be me posting a story. It's going to be me, you know, talking to his mother who has some off-colored views or, right. you know, his sister. It's just going there and having these uncomfortable conversations because that's where change is going to come from. And also, in all that uncomfortability, that's where love can grow. And that's where I can grow empathy for, you know, his mother, or she can look at things and like, she can grow empathy for me. And that's ultimately what we're just doing.
Yep. I love that. And then my last question is, what can people listening right now do? What's the next action that they can take to, you know, be supportive of the Black community and, you know, speak out against police brutality and actually make a change? Because this is viral and this is mainstream. And for me, I mean, I don't know as much as, you know, anyone else, but it seems like we have everyone's attention at least, right? So what can be done?
I think right now, just regarding like, you know, donating or any of that, now you can just white people, you can talk to your white friends and talk to your uncles and your cousins and your girlfriends, you know, for two decades, I was, you know, the one Black girl in my friend group and we never were able to have those tough conversations. And I just think all of my friends that I'm asking to that are in Scottsdale, that are in Manhattan, that are in Oregon, just, you know, talk to your family members, educate yourselves, systemic racism, like, what we're doing, you know, Martin Luther King said, rioting is the language of the unheard. And I don't condone violence. Everyone in the Black community, we don't, but you know, that we need the attention of the oppressor and white people do the work, educate yourselves, donate, start a group chat, just listen. We really need you guys to listen because this is viral and change is not going to happen overnight. We know that, but it's going to happen when you see something happening at the grocery store, like speak up, speak up when you're afraid to. It needs to be a unity. There's only one race and that's the human race. And ultimately we want to be loved and we want to be able to live, Lindsay, you know, Black people, that's all we want. We want to be able to live. I want to be able to go to the bodega and just not be afraid in my own community. And so just, if anything, just listen and talk to your friends, educate them, have those uncomfortable conversations. That's where it's going to grow. A lot of my friends back home, they I had asked them, well, why are you silent? Because that's where I've been hurt the last couple of days. Wow, friends who I love, just not even saying anything, not even checking in on me. Well, they say, I just feel so sick. I can't believe it. Well, this is what I live through every day. Get uncomfortable, listen, and, you know, just be the change you want to see. Be the change you want to see.
I love that. Thank you so much, Bree. Thanks for helping me with this solo part of the episode. It's been so amazing to hear you and to have your voice. And where can everyone follow if they want, you know, more Bree, which I think they definitely will.
Lindsay, I just want to thank you. I think a lot of us have seen our influencers and people we love and respect, like, show who they are during the last, you know, month. And I love you and I love your platform. So thank you for just being a voice. I appreciate you. And, you know, all my Black girlfriends that follow, we love you and we appreciate you. So thank you.
Thank you.
Follow me, Brianna Paul, onto Instagram. And that's where I'm at.
Perfect. Thanks, Bree. And I hope you guys enjoyed the episode today. We are talking to Adam Lyons, a dating coach from London, and he has some really interesting perspective on the three things that you need to do to actually make dating work for you. So we'll see what Adam has to say. Thanks, Bree.
Thanks, Lindsay.
Are you quarantined with your family or someone who just won't stop baking and making such decadent foods? Like, I was that person for a while. I still am that person every now and then. And sometimes I just don't feel good afterwards. And I want to actually feel better and know that I'm treating my body the best that I can. And I don't want to go on a diet because I hate that word. I'd rather nourish my body with healthy and nutritious food that actually makes me feel really good and has ingredients that give me energy and put me in a good mood. So that's why I'm so obsessed with Saqqara. You've heard me talk about it on my Instagram. Not only does Saqqara have delicious meals, but Saqqara also has daily wellness essentials like supplements and herbal teas to support your nutrition. So like, I'm about to go make myself a detox tea because I just had my Saqqara breakfast. And to boost results, you should try the best-selling Metabolism Super Powder. It's an all-natural remedy for bloating, weight gain, and fatigue, which are all the things that you're getting from all these sugary foods that we're eating in quarantine. And it's just like a good boost. And Saqqara delivers to wherever you are. You just have to go to their website. And for my listeners, because I love you, we are offering you 20% off your first order when you go to saqqara.com/acme or enter code ACME at checkout. So that's Saqqara, SAKARA.com/ACME to get 20% off your first order, Saqqara.com/ACME. And I also really wanted to note that Saqqara is donating 50% of their profits to the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, which is really amazing. And I always love to know that the brands that I support are supporting movements that I support. So if you go and you order this, you're actually inadvertently also donating to the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. So that's just good to note. And you're feeling good about yourself and eating well. So check it out, saqqara.com/acme, and let me know what you think.
Hi, guys. My name is Sarah Nicole, and I am the host of the Papaya Podcast, where each week we dish out some sweetness mixed in with some seeds of wisdom, all through candid conversations in a very real and tangible way. I want everyone to know that they're not alone and that we share in these experiences called life. And sometimes when we get to know somebody else's story, it changes ours a little bit as well. So I want you to tune in with us on Mondays, subscribe, rate and review it, and keep these conversations going with us. You can tune in behind the scenes at the Papaya Podcast and the Birds Papaya on Instagram as well. Can't wait to see you next week.
Hey guys, welcome back to We Met at Acme. I'm so excited to be here with dating coach Adam Lyons. Hey Adam.
Hi.
How's it going?
Yeah, it's going good. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming on here. I'm so glad we connected. So for anyone who doesn't know, how old are you and where are you from?
I'm 39 years old, originally from England, but now I live just outside of Austin, Texas.
Love it. Which part of England?
So I'm originally from London. I'm actually a Cockney, which I don't know if you know what that is, but
I do.
Okay, perfect. So yeah, I'm a Cockney. I actually had to go to lessons in school to learn this accent because no one understands the real Cockney accent I have.
Can you do a little sample of the real one?
Man, I knew you can ask that. All right. It's like my real accent's like this. So like we talk, it's just a little bit rough. Like you get known for like being a car salesman, you know what I mean? Like, especially if you're from London. So,
it sounds like Love Island.
Yeah, exactly. It's that kind of thing. It's sort of like, it's funny because I don't go like this very much no more, but whenever I go down London, like, it comes back. And anyway.
That's amazing. I love that. And so we're a little bit into astrology on the podcast, so I have to know, when is your birthday?
So my birthday is December the 9th. I am a Sagittarius.
A Sagittarius dating coach. That's fascinating to me. So how did you get into being a dating coach? Like, what was a path that led you there? You know, were you always into dating? What were you doing before that?
So when I was in school, I got bullied a lot. And there were some kids in school that we were asked, like, you know, who in the future is going to be most likely to achieve different things. It's like, you know, who's going to be prime minister? Who's going to become a millionaire? And then when the teacher left the classroom, the kids changed all the writing on the board and they wrote like, who's going to be a loser, who's never going to get a girlfriend, et cetera. And unanimously, the whole class voted me as least likely to ever get a girlfriend in life. Oh. So yeah, it was pretty brutal. But worse, because I was bullied, it stuck with me and I believed it. And so from 15, when that happened, until 26, I sort of like adopted that identity and just assumed that I was the guy that no one would ever want to date. And I got into a couple of relationships, but every relationship I got into ended with either the person was cheating on me and I was just letting it happen because I didn't want to be alone, or they were emotionally abusive is the wrong word, but I was definitely, you know, being taken advantage of and allowing it to happen because I just didn't know any better. And then this all culminated at 26 years old when one of my girlfriends who was cheating on me broke up with me. And while I was at work, she stole everything from my apartment, my TV, my shower curtain, video games,
what?
Everything.
Oh God. And
yeah, it was pretty rough. So the only thing she left me with was my sofa and two tables. That was it. And I sat on the floor and I had my like, moment. I was like, well, either I can give up. I can blame all women, you know, it can be like every single woman's a horrible person, right. Or I can start looking around me. And there was this phrase that stuck in my head, which is, if everyone around you says the same thing, maybe it's you. And if, you know, maybe it wasn't that women were all cheaters and horrible people. Maybe I was acting like the kind of person that women wanted to cheat on and took advantage of. So I decided to do something about it. And I became obsessed with understanding what makes human beings attracted to each other. And I mean, full on obsession. I read every book on the subject. I have a library just off behind the camera of dating books to this day. And I've got everything from psychological journals that analyze the, you know, all the various studies on male and female infidelity. I've got the handbook of relationship initiation, real deep psychological textbooks that you would really only read if it's for a doctorate. And I read all of them. And I didn't just read them. I tried to duplicate the psychological studies within them myself on people in the streets, just testing to see what worked and what didn't.
Yeah, I love it. And so you become a dating coach, you do this research, and I forgot to ask you in the beginning, so I'm going to ask you now, what is your current relationship status today?
Yeah, so good question. So I'm currently in a polyamorous relationship is probably the best way to describe where I am today.
Isn't it funny that everyone said that you wouldn't even have one girlfriend, but now you have multiple?
It's pretty funny. It's definitely come up as an ironic moment for me multiple times, especially as a lot of the women that I had crushes on in high school and college have reached out since and, you know, to hang out or what have you. And I may or may not have on multiple occasions satisfied teenage Adam's desires. But yeah, it's, you know, really interesting journey to come here. And it's funny, I didn't want to be a dating coach, actually. I was doing it for me. I wasn't doing it to teach. It was not supposed to be a career path. I became known for being that guy that was in the bars, like training and practicing. And it got to a point I was being followed. The reasons I left London, actually. I went into a nightclub that was in Piccadilly Circus. A lot of people know the main area in London. And I got followed by 50 strangers that I didn't know that were just following me and pretending not to be with me, but like were watching me. It was the most surreal experience. And that was when I was like, I got to get out of this town. Like, I can't do this because it's weird. Like, I go and talk to somebody and 50 people are following me.
Wait, following you because they knew who you were?
Yeah, because they started writing articles about me in the newspapers. There was this guy that was going through London and basically practicing meeting and dating people. And, you know, I wasn't being shy about it. I was, you know, I'd meet people and tell them straight up, like, hey, I'm learning dating. Like, I wasn't saying dating coach. I was like, I'm studying. And so I'm not looking for anything serious, but, you know, I'm really interested. And women would, like, on dates would be like, well, I want to know what you found. And I would share information. And I was just on this mission. And a journalist got wind of it. And that was crazy. So they wrote about me in FHM magazine. I got a 5-page spread about, like, the man who, you know, wanders around London learning about dating. And that was it. Like, after that, I was just swamped everywhere I went.
That's amazing. So fast forward, right? You've become a dating coach. And by the way, we're definitely going to get into the polyamory because I have a lot of questions. But you become a dating coach and, you know, you have your first client, your first couple clients. What is your, like, method, quote unquote, that you have now come up with through all of the research that you've done that has worked for you and for your clients?
It's a good question. Initially, there was no system. The very first client came to me and said, hey, teach me. And I was like, dude, can you just leave me alone? Like, I'm talking to this woman, like, you're really irritating me. And he's like, yeah. Oh, come on. Like, you, I was like, I don't gotta do anything. Like, go away. Like, I'm just not interested. And he put £1,000 in my pocket, just pulled it out in cash and put it in my pocket. I said, £1,000, teach me what you're doing. And I was like, okay, you can watch. And literally my first clients were paying like £1,000 for a day. And they were just watching me go and talk to women. That was it. Like, I didn't explain anything. They just watched me and they would ask questions and I would like try and answer, but I didn't really have any phrases for anything. I was, well, you know, this one book kind of says this and this one book kind of says that. And I'm kind of trying to do both. That's how it was back then.
Right.
Now it's 15 years later. I mean, hundreds of thousands of students now. Now we have a system. What we teach nowadays is called the ACE formula. It's 3 steps. And we tell people, we don't believe in manipulation. We don't believe in changing fundamentally who you are. We don't believe in lying. These are 3 things that we are against completely. The whole focus is developing 3 things. 1, abundance, which is the A in ACE. And it's just having a friend group filled with the kind of people you would like to date. You're not dating them all, but they're just people you'd like to date. Then C, confidence, which is a phrase I used to hate because I was like, what is confidence? How do you get confidence? But we now teach it as experience under supervision. So a good way of thinking about that is like driving a car. First time you drive a car, you're not very confident, but with an instructor and lots of hours under your belt, you become confident. You don't buy a confidence, you know, audio to get through it, right? You just practice. So, but under supervision. So C is practice under supervision, which is experience and confidence. And then lastly, we have escalation, which is a slow escalation of arousal. So you're slowly turning somebody on rather than just the amount of times I hear people go on a date, they get back in the bedroom and then they're like, okay, let's kiss or like sex now. And they don't realize like humans, all humans, men and women need a slow burning. Like you got to really warm it up. And when you warm it up correctly, then it's like almost guaranteed to happen, but you got to take it slow and do it in the right way. And so we teach people exactly how to escalate slowly, how to read the temperature, how to make sure you get consent, which is huge. It's funny. We've been teaching consent for like 12 years and it's only become popular in the media recently, but it was right. A huge part because actually we found that, you know, we always had a fear. If you move rapidly and you end up in bed with somebody and they wake up the next morning, because we know about, you know, about buyer's remorse just from buying things, you wake up the next day. And in relationships, it's so much more deadly. You know, like you wake up the next day and you're in bed with a stranger, you can have a real freak out. So we've been very strong about consent since the beginning, like clear verbal consent every step of the way. Even when you're being intimate with somebody, I won't assume, you know, I could be, you know, we could have oral sex with each other, but I'm still not going to assume that full intercourse is okay without a discussion.
Yeah. That's interesting. So if that's the case and consent is so important, I'm assuming, but tell me if I'm wrong, that you don't believe in sex on a first date.
So yeah, good question. I believe each human being has an individual right to have exactly what they want individually. So if you and your partner both want sex on a first date, you should have sex on a first date, providing you're both clear about it, there's communication, you have consent, and you're being smart about your sexual practices.
And yeah.
I believe this in every part of dating. I believe if you believe that sex should be 6 months later, then sex should be 6 months later. I say it's so important that people do what they want within the realms of what's possible and that doesn't hurt other people.
Agreed. But it's like, how do you know, like, how do you have that discussion if you're meeting each other for the first time, you're drinking a bunch of like sangria and you're, you know, not in your right minds and like, you're just, you know, you haven't had sex in months and like, you're just kind of like feeling that moment. You know what I mean? It's like, how do you take a step back and be like, do we both want this?
So when we start drinking, so first of all, I rarely drink specifically because of that. So
yeah.
If I do drink, then the minute the alcohol comes out, I look at the other person and I say, okay, let's be real. How many drinks until you get drunk? Like this, I was like, I'm a lightweight. I don't drink. I was like two and I'm drunk.
Right.
And they'll, you know, and then they'll be like, oh, you know, three for me or four, or what have you. I say, okay, cool. So I was like, let's just have a discussion right now because, you know, we're having fun and there's alcohol. I won't have sex with anybody who's drunk. I was like, I'm just putting it out there now early. And most of the time someone's like, oh, I appreciate that. Or what makes you think you're getting lucky, right? They'll say that. I was like, hey, I'm just telling you a fact. And so I'll be like, so let's call three drinks drunk, whether we're drunk or not. I was like, and that's just after that point, I was like, just so you know the expectations, no matter what happens, no matter how much you beg, no matter how much you try. And they're laughing at this point because like, beg, yeah, right. I'm like, no, it ain't happening. And then we'll keep drinking. And now I'm getting drunk, we're having fun, but I won't break my rule. So now we go to bed. And then they're like, come on, let's have sex. And I'm like, hey, you made a deal with sober Adam. You're talking to drunk Adam. Drunk Adam listens to sober Adam. So this just isn't happening. And it's cool because that's that slow escalation. They'll be wanting it more and more and more. And at this point, we can flirt and like I'll turn them on and arouse them, but there's no sex happening. And then typically what will happen is they'll spend the whole night. And of course, that doesn't mean that, you know, if they're really after it, like, you know, there are other ways to help them get off without actually having sex.
Right.
And so I'm more than happy to move towards those kind of like, what I like to call like PG-13 interactions. And then the goal is actually to fall asleep, to sober up. And then when you wake up in the morning, then if you want to have sex, you can have sex then. I mean, I prefer morning sex anyway, so it's like a win-win for me. Like tired sex is just never as good as first thing in the morning sex, in my opinion. So
I agree.
Okay, perfect. Good. So yeah, it lends it nicely towards that. So there have been many times where, yes, we haven't had sex on the first night, but we've absolutely had sex in the morning, sober, clear. And the person that I'm with never feels taken advantage of because I stuck to what I said I was going to do. On the other hand, I've absolutely had people say to me, okay, then we're only having two drinks. I'm like, okay, all right. This is how the night's going. Got it.
Right. Well, at least you get it up front when you say it up front. And I actually really like the idea of like, it's so funny. So I read recently someone, they were talking about a female orgasm and they were like, if you want a woman to have an orgasm, tell her not to come during sex.
Oh, yeah.
Be like, please don't come. Please don't come. It's like the same thing with the sex, you know, we're not having sex.
I love that you're being this candid. Absolutely. One of the things that I say to a woman is sex doesn't get good until the fifth time. So the first four don't count. I always say that to people. I'm like, sex is terrible until number five because we don't know each other's bodies. I was like, next, I know how difficult it can be to make a woman come. So I'm actually just not going to let you come for the first five times. So the whole point here is for you to get so frustrated that by the six, you're begging me. I was like, so that's our goal here. And they'll be like, what? No, no way. And they'll say stuff like, okay, then you don't get to come. I was like, that's fine. I've practiced abstinence. I've got this. And that's the flirtation. Like everyone's like, what is flirtation? Flirtation is pretending you're going to deny each other while secretly going for it. Right. So that's the goal.
Yeah. And I mean, sometimes it takes even longer, I feel like, especially when there's such an emotional connection, you have to get the physical connection to like, get up to where your emotional connection is. So like, if you've been building, I don't have sex for a bit when I first start dating someone that I want to be serious with, like, you know, almost like 3 weeks to a month, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, then I might need like 3 weeks with the sex to get to where we had just gotten that. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's not fully aligned.
Yeah, for sure. You want to make, and like, and the whole thing is like, there's no need to rush it. Like if the relationship's good, you're going to be having sex for a long time. I have a personal pet peeve with people that just like have sex and then they're done. I'm like, this is probably because of my career, but there's so much effort that goes into making sure it's done right the first time. Why would you stop? Like, if you've put the effort in, like, go for it. Keep going. Yeah. Like, there's no need. And I think people have a fear of commitment. But again, that doesn't mean exclusivity. It doesn't have to, especially nowadays with polyamory. Like, you don't have to be exclusive, but you should commit. Like, you should be in somebody's life. But it's funny, talking about the orgasms. One of my biggest lessons that I learned was that a woman will find an orgasm easier if she has to reach for it. Whereas for a male, it's easier if he's given it. And that's where it gets confusing, because a lot of men feel they have to give the orgasm to the woman as opposed to get her to reach for it. And so women tend to do a lot better if you tease and deny and they push for the orgasm. And when that happens, they're far more likely to orgasm. And guys just don't get it, because guys don't work that way.
Yeah, it's so true. It's very different. I feel like, you know, with my, like, you know, I have a boyfriend now, and like with me, it was like, first of all, it was all me. Like, it really had nothing to do with him. It was all me, like, getting out of my head, which is like a big thing that I don't know if that's a woman versus man thing, but like, you know, I've never heard a guy being like, oh, I'm just so in my head, like I couldn't come. You know, it's like, it's so well, okay. Women. It's like,
all right. So it's funny you say that. So can we be real here just for a second?
Yes.
Because I absolutely had that experience a month ago.
Really?
And, oh yeah, absolutely. But there's a reason for it. It's a medical reason for it, which is why this is fascinating. So I'm going to be 40 this year. I'm getting old. And I noticed that there's been something off in the way I have sex. And it wasn't like performance anxiety or anything like that. That was fine. There wasn't, you know, any erectile difficulties. But in the bedroom, I noticed that what I wanted had shifted. And it all came down to this one night where I was with a woman, and we were having sex, and I couldn't reach climax. I was trying to, but I was in my head. And then she looked at me, she goes, what do you need? Like, and you know, me and her, we're really in tune sexually. And I was like, mm-hmm. Is it weird if I say that what I need is a hug right now? I was like, because I kind of really feel I need a hug. And she's like, no, oh my God, that's so amazing, of course. And I was thinking about it, I was like, this is so strange. Why do I want a hug? Why am I not just, you know, wanting an orgasm? So I start noticing there's other issues. So I call my doctor. Turns out my testosterone count is crazy low, like dangerously low, like heart issues low. They rush me in and they're like, you need to get on supplements to change it. But it was so fascinating for me, because a lot of women don't understand the role that testosterone plays, you know, between the sexes. And like I said, I became nerdy about this stuff. And my son has a genetic condition about testosterone as well. So I know a lot about it. But do you have any idea about the standard testosterone count difference between men and women?
No, and not only do I not know that, but I actually had someone reach out to me to tell me a similar problem that they had with mm-hmm. testosterone. And because we had been talking on the podcast and on Instagram about men with low sex drives, or just like how it's very, like, it's more common now almost that, like, at least the women that listen to my podcast have higher sex drives than their male partners. And, like, don't understand why or what that is. And I actually had a situation like that with an ex, and like, he was just never in the mood. And I bet you it had something to do with his testosterone. So I'm very interested to hear.
Guaranteed. So my primary partner who I live with, when she reached out, like, so I started this like a week ago, so this is all like really fresh to me, but like a month ago when she would hug me, all I wanted to do was like hug and snuggle and watch movies. And, you know, it's not like we didn't have sex. We had sex.
That's literally what I was going through.
That's funny. So yeah, we literally had sex every night because as being a dating coach, I know the importance of bonding through sex. So we had sex every night, no matter what. And we actually have a thing like, whether you want it or not, you're having sex. Both of us, we have agreed to this deal. So we have sex every night. But I like wanted the sex to just be quick and done. And I wanted to snuggle and watch movies. Whereas 2 days ago, now I'm on the testosterone, we cuddled and I instantly wanted to just grab her and take her. And she's like, wow, that's been a while. And so it's a huge difference. But knowing the testosterone count, this is crazy. So I think you'll find this interesting. So testosterone obviously is linked to aggression, but it's also linked to sex drive. Okay. During a woman's ovulation, her testosterone will spike. So you probably know once a month during ovulation, you feel hornier than the rest of the month, right?
Yeah.
How would you describe that jump in terms of, if you had to guess, like, what percentage has it gone up in terms of how you feel? Like, are you twice as horny or 20%.
Well, I mean, I'm like very horny generally, so it's hard to 100% know the difference. But what I do notice is that my body gets like, maybe like ripe is where it's like, you mm-hmm. know, when animals, like when like the female is, you know, let's say like ovulating or, you know,
yeah, you're
ready to mate, it's like your body like gets better and like things like like are perkier and like, you know what I mean? It's like, and that makes me want to have sex because I'm like, I'm feeling myself right now.
I love it. What percentage would you say that changed if you had to guess? Because you're going to love this.
Maybe 15%.
Okay, so it's a small spike, but you notice it, right?
Yeah.
So the average female testosterone count, and obviously I'm not a doctor, but you know you can find it by Googling, is somewhere between 25 and like 48, roughly. 25 and 48. For a male, an average male in like their prime, you're looking about 1,200. So when you're wondering about the male sex drive compared to a female's, just remember that your spike, you got it about right. During your ovulation, it's about 15-20% increase. Mm-hmm. So you might go from, you know, I don't know, 25 to 31, something like that. But the male, on average, is 1,200. That's how much more sex drive they have.
Yeah.
And mine was considered like dangerously low, like you need to come and see a doctor today, at 283. So that's still 10x what the average woman would have in terms of sex drive. And so it's just wild to think about like the way testosterone plays and the difference between men and women. Like I had no idea the numbers are that crazy. And the reason I know is my son has a testosterone count of 16,000. So it's...
Oh, wow. Yeah, How old is he?
He's 5.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he's got a genetic disorder. He hasn't hit puberty yet. When that kicks off, it's going to go even crazier. So yeah.
Meaning like he's going to be like masturbating every minute?
Constantly. It's funny. Even as a 5-year-old, he walks around with a hard on like all the time. He's got erections all the time. Like, and he's super conscious of his body. Like sexual is the wrong word because he's too young, but like he definitely is like very aware of his own private parts and, you know, it's just, it sucks as part of his genetic condition, but obviously it helped us learn a lot about it. So anyway, the point is, this is like the level I wanted to understand, like men and women, like how do we work? How do we operate? And to be able to like, you know, firmly attune it and read it. So, you know, for women, they need their testosterone being lower. They need to chase the orgasm. They need to want it themselves. And right. So it really is all about them. And when you tell them they can't have it, it just makes them want it more.
Yeah, I totally agree. Let's talk a little bit about your polyamorous relationship that you're in. When did you first want to explore the idea of it? And I feel like there's such a fine line between like polyamory and just like not wanting to commit to like one person, you know? Like I feel like anyone who argues against the idea is like, well, it's just people who like want to have sex with a lot of people. You know what I mean? So like, yeah, what is your defense for all of that?
That's the standard excuse. So the defense is an interesting word. So let's start like this. 50%, give or take, of all marriages in America end in divorce.
Yeah.
Most of those usually involve the addition of one or two other partners. So realistically, we're talking about most of America is already in polyamorous relationships. They're just unhealthy ones with no discussion.
Mm.
If you're cheating, you're in a polyamorous relationship. You just haven't admitted it and you're not handling it correctly. If you're dating, you know, you're seeing a few different people. If you're seeing someone new, but you still think about your ex, you're polyamorous. If you're still seeing your ex, you're definitely polyamorous, right? So when you look at all these situations, there are a lot more polyamorous people than people are actually counting. It's just, they don't consider themselves polyamorous. There are very few people I've met that haven't gone through some form of training when it comes to dating who feel comfortable breaking up with somebody when single. They like moving on first, meeting somebody new, and then jumping ship. So there will usually be a period of transition where they're dating two people. Yeah, polyamory is like almost like a natural part of human design. You know, you ever read the book Sperm Wars?
No.
Really good book. And it just explains like even the shape of the male penis, like the head is designed to remove sperm from the female vagina specifically because polyamory exists. So
what do you mean, you know, remove sperm?
The head shape, it's designed almost like a shovel so it can go in, scoop, trap sperm behind the head and pull it out. It's designed to do that.
So that you could give it to multiple women?
So that, no, this is actually in reverse. So that if another man has had sex with a woman, if I then have sex afterwards, my penis is designed to pull his sperm out and put mine in. That's the shape of the penis is designed to do that, the human penis.
That is crazy.
Yeah. So there's so much about humans. Like most of the time, monogamy in the animal kingdom typically only occurs in species that also have an infant homicide. So where the new male comes in and murders the children. And that's typically the time when you see monogamy, which, you know, just, we don't have it. I mean, look at the Greeks, look at the Romans. I mean, you know, even, I think it's Barack Obama's grandparents were part of a polyamorous lifestyle. Like, it's so in our culture to have polyamory, and it has been for hundreds of thousands of years. I mean, it's the only way we could have survived as a species is for us, because, you know, we can't interbreed, right? So you absolutely have to spread as far as wide and get as varied a genetic code as possible. It's our society that has got us to believe that monogamy is key and that monogamy is, you know, is right for us. And I'm actually not against monogamy. Again, I go back to my same default. Whatever's right for you is what I believe you should have. If you come to me and you say, I'm monogamous, I want to find my perfect partner, I love working with you. I'll help you find your perfect partner. If you come to me and you say, you know, I want to try polyamory, I'll absolutely help you do it. But with communication, with clear discussion, bring it in the healthiest way possible.
So how do you navigate your polyamorous relationship? You said you have a primary partner. Is this person the mother of your child?
So yeah, good question. So I was in what we call a closed triad for about 8 years. So I was dating two women exclusively, and they were dating each other and they were dating me. And we were all together for about 8 years. I had children with both of the women and we all lived together in the same house. At a certain point, it became apparent that one of the partners and myself weren't really getting on. And it was done very slowly over a very long period of time. It was actually a 2-year breakup. So there were multiple tries to fixing it. There were discussions. There were all sorts of ways to fix it. And it was nothing to do with our dating life. And it was everything to do with the regular kind of things that would end a normal relationship. You know, getting annoyed over small little details, things like that. And it just got to a point where it was clear we weren't going to work. And so we decided to separate. So the one mother moved out, which left me living with the other woman, who is amazing, and we get on incredibly well. So, however,
but what about their relationship? The two
they broke up during the breakup. So about a year into the breakup, they broke up, and then a year later, I was still kind of making it work because she's the mother of my children, and we wanted to give it everything. And we gave it everything. It was 2 years. We even, after we split up, had a phone conversation where just as friends, and we ended up arguing about like a really dumb thing, and it was just like, we're just fighting all the time. There's no point. You know, like, it's better for the kids to not see us fight. And we get on really well as long as we're not talking to each other. So, you know, casual, friendly conversation. We actually like each other and, you know, wish each other the best, but it's just, there's something about our personalities that in the same
relative they clash.
Yeah, we clash and totally fine. So she actually lives 5 minutes down the road, you know, and the kids spend time between the two houses. So no big stress there. But so now I'm in my relationship with what I'd call my primary partner because we've been together for 8 years, but we're still polyamorous. There are still other people. We've had dates with other women and, you know, most definitely have had experiences. We're just not putting it in the public eye because every time we go public with anything about our dating life, it ends up on the Daily Mail and goes all over the internet. And so we're keeping it quiet until there's somebody serious. At the moment, you know, there's a few people that are really interesting, but who knows what will happen.
Yeah. And does your partner identify as bisexual because, you know, she was with a woman as well? Or is she just like sex curious? Or I don't know if there's a specific word.
Good question. I think, you know, knowing her, she's a unique individual. She just identifies as herself. And I think this is like a really key part. We're not really into labels. Even polyamorous, we only say it because other people, you know, identify with that word. You know, the reality is we're just us. You know, for the right person, she's attracted to them. But, you know, it's got to be the right person.
And right, it's like
everything
it's
else
energy.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, exactly. It's real connection and who they are. She cares a lot more about who somebody is than, you know, what they have in between their legs.
Yeah, and just out of curiosity, because, again, very into astrology over here, what is your primary partner's birthday and then the one, the other one?
I love this. So the previous person that left, she's a Libra.
Ah, same.
And my current primary is Sagittarius.
So you guys are like basically the same.
We're basically the same human being.
That's wonderful. Two Sagittarius are a great match, actually.
It's really good. We get on really well together and
Yeah. And I can see how as a Libra myself, how I love my Sagittarius friends, but I don't think I would ever be able to date them.
Yeah, it's tough. I've definitely dated a Libra before and definitely had a similar kind of issue. So, you know, I'm not super into horoscopes, but I've definitely seen, you know, for whether it's through the time of year they're born and social situations or something more than that, you know, whichever way you want to look at it, I've definitely noticed that after a while, me and Libra tend to clash, but right. me and Sagittarius get on incredibly well.
I could see a Libra not wanting to share. That's a me thing, but I don't know. I could see, yeah, I could see it.
This Libra definitely likes sharing.
Okay.
Yeah, she was actually the instigator of the whole thing at the very beginning.
So. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So I want to unpack one more thing and then we're going to do some rapid fire questions and I'm going to get a quote from you. But you had mentioned the first thing, the A, was about having a friend group that includes people that you would want to date. Mm-hmm. So I love that. I think it's a really interesting concept. But if you have a friend group with people you want to date in it, why don't you just date those people? You know what I mean? Or is that part of it?
No, that's part of it. You absolutely can. And sometimes it happens. What it really is about is just about hanging out with the kind of people you want to date. So many of us end up in what I call a relationship of convenience. You know, we've met through friends or we've met through this other thing and we just end up together. And even friend groups of convenience, like, oh, we live in the same street, so now we're friends. This concept is actually really well known in psychology, but it isn't the best way to make friendships. It's why a lot of us have toxic relationships or toxic friendships or things that just don't serve us. When you actively cultivate a friend group that's packed with people with similar ideals, similar thoughts, similar philosophies, you actually have a better friend group. You get on better, less conflict, you grow together, less energy spent in arguing over silly things. So yeah, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
And then of course, when you meet somebody in that group and you want to date them, then it's easy.
I feel like right now, like we're in quarantine and you know, the world's in a pandemic, a lot of friendships are being like rethought and reconsidered, at least for me, right? Because I'm like, you know, my phone used to light up all day. Like I haven't I don't really text with my friends right now, right? Like if we're going to see each other, we'll FaceTime each other, you know, once or twice a week. Whereas before it was like, we're all constantly talking, making plans, seeing each other. Like, what would your advice be? I know like technically you're a dating coach, but I feel like you definitely have, you know, some good opinions on friendships as well.
They were texting you and then they stopped.
Yeah. Just like, you know, friendships right now, it's like, oh, it's really down to like only the really important ones. And I know you're a dating coach, but I feel like you probably have a good opinion on this. It's like, what do you do about, you know, thinking that and realizing that like some of these friendships are not serving you at all? Like, how do you confront that?
That right there is exactly why we teach abundance in our core module, because your friend group is supposed to be people that you want to interact with and hang out with. That's the whole point of it. And the reason most of us do it is it's a relationship of convenience combined with habit. We always do this, so we keep always doing that. And human beings love habits, we love patterns. The minute you get conscious about who you're going to hang out with, everything changes. The only people I hang out with and interact with my people I truly want to interact with and hang out with. A lot of my friends, my female friends are all women that I would absolutely date if the situation was funded. That doesn't mean we have to, doesn't mean we have to be together, but we could. And it's fascinating. I've got a really cool friend. She's married. She's awesome. Me and her, we don't flirt, but it's clear that flirtation would absolutely happen if we were both single. And yet instead we're just good friends. And that friendship is super tight. We don't cross any boundaries. We don't cross any lines. We have nicknames for each other for when we're drunk, but that's it. And me and that person will probably never get together in this entire lifetime. And that's awesome. And when she texts me, I'm super excited about it. When I text her, she's super excited about it. And that's how friendship should be.
Yeah, I completely agree. So we do this fun thing on our Instagram where we ask poll questions. So I'm going to ask you a couple of these, and then I'm going to ask you for a quote you can leave us with. So let's see. People will write in and they'll tell me their relationship woes, and I will make it so that people can vote on someone else's problem. So, can it work if everything is exceptionally compatible except for political views? Yes or no?
Yes, absolutely. Do you want me to elaborate?
Well, they're rapid fire, but if you have like a one sentence, yes.
Yeah, I think the key to a good relationship is to be able to have differences and yet still be okay with each other. So
I like that. Your significant other cannot get over hookups that happened when you guys weren't dating to the point where they talk down to and insult the other person. Work through it or break up?
that's somebody that they need to see a counselor to get over their past issues in their relationship. And you can absolutely guide them through that and be there and be supportive. But if not, then move on.
You met your partner's parents for the first time and you feel like it was weird and didn't go well. Your significant other hasn't said anything about it. Bring it up or bad idea?
I actually had this situation. One of my ex-significant other's family members tried to attack me at a gathering when we first met. I brought it up. I made it very clear that I would not be going to any more family gatherings.
Yeah, it's not fair. Mm-hmm. When texting, does a change in response time indicate a change in feelings for the person?
Sometimes a change in response time in texting indicates a change in feelings, and sometimes people are just busy. The key is knowing which. Like this week, I've been incredibly bad at texting people because I've been recovering from a minor operation about testosterone replacement. So I've been bad this week.
Do you ever talk to your parents about issues with your partner?
I never talk to my parents about issues with my partner because my parents know absolutely nothing about dating.
Yeah. If you don't feel good about yourself, and we'll end with this one. If you don't feel good about yourself, do you take it out on your partner?
If you don't feel good about yourself, that is absolutely something you have to address yourself and you have to fix it. You should never take that out on anyone.
But do you? Because you're human.
I never do. If I don't feel good about myself, the thing I'm most likely to do is to say to my partner, hey, I'm really not feeling good about myself right now. I'm feeling out of sorts. Are you cool with me, you know, taking some alone time? I'm going to go and hide in the bedroom for a bit. This is like a common conversation in our household. If one of us is struggling, we ask the other one for permission to fix ourselves.
That's really smart. I'm going to try to do that.
It's really good. It works great. Yeah. Like just life it and you handle everything.
I love it. And Adam, will you leave us with a quote or piece of advice that we can use in our lives?
Yeah, one of my favorite quotes is, when it comes to dating, your goal should be to leave everybody better. And if you go into every relationship or potential relationship with that in mind, you'll actually just leave, you know, because you're invariably going to break up with more people than you end up dating. But if you're constantly thinking, okay, when we break up, I want them to be in a better place, having that intention and really trying to strive for it actually gives you some great karma behind you. Like, you know, I, to this day, can still go to dinner with my exes. I can bring my current partner with them. They're so happy for us because the goal was to leave them in a better place.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's such a red flag when someone says like, my ex is a psycho. It's like, that's a reflection on you.
Yeah. If you're not friends with at least the majority of your exes, it's a bad sign for me. Like I need you to be friends with at
least. Well, I don't think friends, but like on good terms.
Yeah. Friendly terms. Like I don't need to be hanging out, but absolutely on good terms. Like when someone's like, oh my God, my ex was this, my ex was that, my ex was the other. And I'm like, oh, this is bad news. But when they're like, oh no, that's a great person. I wish them best, but you know, they've moved on. I'm like, great.
Exactly.
You're a good person.
Yeah. Agreed. So where can everyone find you, follow you? And if you have any availability, sign up for your dating coaching.
Yeah, so we have our website is aceformulablueprint.com and it's packed with a ton of friction. We've done it on purpose because we don't want to work with anyone that hasn't like done some due diligence and really looked at what we teach and how we teach and learn our story. So people can just go to aceformulablueprint.com, download all the free stuff, watch the free videos, enjoy it all. And if at the end of all that, maybe it's good enough and you don't need us, that's great. But if you do still need help and you want someone to guide you through it, then you can apply on the website to talk to us and we can take it from there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Adam. This was great. I hope everyone enjoyed listening to the episode. Write us a review with your thoughts and hope everyone has a good day.